and welcome to the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where small press comics make one hell of a big noise. It's episode 168, and I'm Vince Hunt, creator of The Red Mouse from Mars. And joining me this week is the hostess with the mostess. It's Mr. Tony Esmond.
Hello.
And this week he's doing an impression of Daniel Butcher. Because
no! People don't realise we've been shouting no at each other for about the last 10 minutes because we thought it's funny.
Yeah, we did think it was funny. You know, I don't know if anyone else will get the joke, but stay tuned for the outtakes because you'll probably hear it there.
No!
I mean, it is just a clip of two, I don't know, insane men just screaming no, but it just makes me laugh.
We did imagine a sort of fantasy environment where Dan was behind a closed door having sex with a lady and we were standing in front of it. It was a little bit of a sort of...
Yeah.
Yeah, nice little story. We should make a comic of that one. And we could hear him shouting things.
Maybe that would be volume two of our anthology. Who knows?
Yeah, just that big splash page.
Yeah. Oh, oh dear. but yes, as we were saying, our normal co-host, Dan Butcher, can't be here this week. And we are recording early.
Yeah.
As you listen to it now, this is post-Thought Bubble, this show. So, for all those people that went to Thought Bubble, hope you had a lovely time. Obviously,
I went there; it was brilliant.
Yeah, Tony was there. So, do you want to send a message to anyone that you saw there?
No, I clearly didn't tell you my name because it's too embarrassing.
So,
and if you have my underwear, please return it.
Yeah. why are you only taking like one pair with you?
Oh, it spreads thin, doesn't it?
Oh. That's the...
Splash page. Say splash page again.
No.
No!
As you can tell, the seatbelts are off. And and we're going a bit crazy. Short, sharp, and to the point. That's this week's show. We've got some comics to talk about. We've got a couple of questions to talk about. Me and Tony are just basically in a room together having some fun. That really messed with them,
good,
wasn't it?
Yeah. I'll play with their minds.
Yeah. Do you know who doesn't play with our minds?
Dan, because he's just sent me a picture of Superman's crotch.
Well, that's not playing with our minds. Well, I suppose it is, isn't it? Really? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
But Dan only plays with people's hearts.
And their crotches.
No!
No!
But this terrible segue is brought to you by the lovely people at Comic House.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, our sponsor of this show. And, they're the indie comic marketplace that you really need to check out. And especially now that they're publishing a lot more as well. So amazing.
Yes, you
stuff. Yes. There's a huge selection of titles on their database. So a lot of people, like, put their comics on there and you can buy the hard copies. And they only take 1 pence commission of the sales, which is awesome.
That's brilliant.
Yeah, especially in
this. What if you're American?
Well, I don't know. I guess if you go to comichouse.com, you can find out all the information, can't you?
Yeah, please do.
Yeah, please do. But yeah, they're great supporters of this show. They put up with these terrible ads that we do.
Yeah.
And they publish their own anthology. They're publishing some individual titles. You might hear a bit more about one of them in a short while. Plus, they also have an app. Yes. It's like Netflix for comics. For only £3 a month, you get access.
Did we make that up?
I'm not sure whether I made it up.
Should we copyright it?
Yeah, perhaps we should.
Okay. It's got the name of another company in it, and it's not many words, but we'd probably get away with it.
Yeah, yeah. We get away with murder on this show. Not literally. Don't go into our past episodes. You won't hear someone being murdered on air. Only our own confidence and self-esteem.
Ian was good last week, wasn't he?
Lovely. Yeah, good old Ian Ashcroft. Yeah.
It was good.
Thank you for the feedback on last week's show.
Yeah, it was nice. Yeah.
It was cracking.
And that's only a few days ago, it feels like, because we're recording early. So we're recording on a Wednesday.
It was literally a few days ago. But people won't know this. They'll be hearing this on a Monday or Tuesday or Wednesday.
Hearing it in 2025 in the future.
Yeah. I don't care when you heard this, as long as you heard it and enjoyed it. And
maybe you're from the far-flung future and you're hearing it now.
Yeah, maybe this is like a time capture of what society was like.
Yeah.
Oh, what does that mean? What does that mean for our race?
I don't know. Can we ask you who won the Grand National? Are you able to tell us? Is that not how time travel works? I don't know.
No, Tony. You just sound like a lunatic. Do you have a tin foil hat?
I wish I had. I might make one, actually. Yeah. That'd be good, wouldn't it? My little profile picture.
I know you've got tin foil underpants.
Well, you have to. Clanked about, didn't it, in there?
Yeah. It protects you when you've got your mobile phone in your pocket.
Yeah, I am worried about that, because occasionally I put my mobile phone between my legs. And if I'm going to spawn any more children, then you have to be careful with that, don't you? All the radio waves.
Well, if you call it that, I don't think there's any chance of you doing it.
Hello, lady. Would you like to spawn with me?
Why are you a frog? Come, let us spawn.
Don't worry that clanking. That's just my silver pants.
Why is it clanking if it's made of tin foil?
I don't know, that's true, actually. Mm-hmm. Don't know. It's sort of, what noise do you think? I bet if you crushed it around your knob, it would hurt, wouldn't it?
Oh, why did you have to make it crude?
You suggested my pants are made of silver foil. I'm looking at a poster of the Silver Surfer. I wonder if that's what's happened to him.
What?
Foil knob.
That may be what that comic's called in another language.
No.
Yes. This week this show is brought to you by the word no and the lovely people at Comic House. You can find loads of stuff on their database and on the app.
I've written some down.
Yes, what have we got there, Tony?
The Bionic Man. That's written by Phil Hester, art by Ed Taddeo.
I love Phil Green Hester's Hornet work.
Yeah, he's a good writer, isn't he?
And artist. He's a really good artist.
Yeah,
as well.
He is, that's true. Green Hornet 28 is written by Jay Nitz, who I think is also a very good artist and has got a really cool name, Jay Nitz. That's cool, isn't it? Jethro Morales.
You say it as one word?
Jay Nitz. You could do both, couldn't you?
Well, no. Not if it's not one word. You just...
I don't know.
I mean...
Kids these days, I don't understand it. There's Alterna Crime Anthology. That looks really good. And it's got some art in it by Brian Level. I like Brian Level. I've got some original art by him, and he is very good.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah. They're the three I picked out.
Oh, well. Yeah. And there's tons more, as well as that great stuff. Is that Bionic Man with the... what is it? Is it... Yes, no, the Bigfoot.
I think some of it's got him in. Yeah, it's not all, but I think some of it has got him in, yeah.
We're all about Bigfoot comics on this show.
I've got that on DVD. That's a good show still. It's very watchable.
Yeah. Can you do the noise that it made whenever the Bionic Man did anything?
Occasionally I do during bedtime sessions. I make that noise.
So what does that sound like?
I'd have to do the actions. I'll show you. If you come to Thought Bubble, oh, no, it's past. Maybe another day.
That's something to look forward to, isn't it?
But what if they're listening to this before Thought Bubble?
How is that possible?
I don't know.
Well, if you listen to this before next year's Thought Bubble,
that's true.
Yeah,
that's good.
Yeah,
good.
Anyway, go to comichouse.com and find out more. Those great folks, because we love them, and
people like that one. And I think people will be pleased with that one.
And they put up with us.
Yeah.
So this week's show, obviously, we've got no guests. We've got some fantastic guests lined up over the next few weeks, and because it was, we decided to record this early pre-Thought Bubble. Because Tony's going to be at Thought Bubble, or was at Thought Bubble.
Yeah, was at Thought Bubble.
You're manning the No Brow table, aren't you, Tony?
I am No Brow and Flying Eye. Yeah.
Nice.
Just post Hilda coming out, the cartoon. How good was that? It's very good. Yes, it was.
What is the date of that?
Friday.
Really? Oh, so by the time you hear this, I would have absolutely rinsed all of that cartoon. Yeah. So expect us to talk about it in the near future, because I cannot wait.
Yeah, you've seen the. I mean, I know you said you watched the advert loads, didn't you?
Yeah, I have. Yeah,
so nice, isn't it?
So good. It's just.
And it's a little bit creepy as well, a little bit strange.
But that's what I love. I mean, for me, the greatest sort of children's stories are the ones like that. That, you know, obviously they've got imagination and they're original and unique, but there's always a slight darkness to it that I think kids love. I mean, there's a reason that Roald Dahl is. You know, his stories are so classic. Yeah. I mean, you read some of the original Roald Dahl stuff and you think, Jesus Christ, this is dark.
What was he on? What was he on?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think kids love that. I mean, you know, when I was a kid, I used to love like dark stories. And
I used to love drugs when I was a kid. They were good, weren't they?
Yeah. That's been a lifelong passionate.
Total drugs.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. And more about Luke Pearson later. Little tease there. More about him later.
Ooh.
During the shout outs. Yeah.
Yes.
A bit of a story for you, that one.
Oh, that's very excited. I'm not quite sure what Tony's going to say as well, so this is actually quite exciting for me. We're not that, we don't prep that much on this show, so every time we come in,
not at all.
We've got a few notes and then we just let it fly, don't we? Speaking of flying and trailers, got to say a little bit about it. I really like the Captain Marvel trailer.
Right, I'm not watching trailers anymore. I haven't told you this story yet, have I?
No.
Right, but I'm morally against them. No. Yes. I would like to use the phrase, I'm relatively indifferent to trailers.
Are you using this? Was that your Bionic Man noise? No. Are you using this to state on the record that you are not going to watch trailers anymore?
Yes.
Yes.
Because I never see the telly, right? And I never watch the internet with the sound on. Because I'm usually on the train or something.
Yeah.
And we don't really have the internet work. And I just tend to watch them with the sound off. And it has zero fucking impact on me. Because it's like watching something with the sound off. It's by huge degrees less of an impact on your interest.
Yeah. And I will tell you this. The Captain Marvel trailer, obviously it's been out. It's, you know, doing the rounds with GIFs, etc.
Yeah.
I thought it was in terms of story and stuff, it's functional. It does what it has to do. It felt to me in the way that, you know, the Black Panther movie trailers were. First one was okay. Second one was better. Film was great. I think it's gonna follow the same path. But when I first watched it, it was just on my phone. You know, it's just YouTube. I thought that was all right. And then I watched it on like my screen, like actual TV at home. And it has so much more impact. I know exactly where you're coming from because the sound was better, you know, the bigger picture. It just felt more epic, you know.
And slightly controversial for me to say this. Everyone ready?
Go on.
I wish they'd just leave us alone.
Who are you talking about?
Movies and TV.
You could be.
I wish they'd just
anyone.
Leave us alone for a bit. Just leave us just to read comics and just have comics for a while.
Yeah.
And not. Yeah. And it's not affecting sales. It's not doing us any good.
Yeah.
They're scraping a barrel. And what have we got now? A Loki TV series. I could not give a flying fucking fanny around
that is early days. Obviously, there's been that announcement.
I know.
Yeah, what gets me is, obviously, the film's out in March. And is it too soon?
I know, March?
Yeah,
really?
Yeah. And they released that. And obviously, I would have thought, you know, you have that, and just even if it may be too soon to release a trailer, but at least have that, have a bit of breathing room within this sort of, you know, the comic book community. And then you hear this other news of Disney potentially doing like Marvel series on their streaming sites, and they, you know, it could be characters like Loki and Scarlet Witch. That's what the news is. This is early doors, but they released that news pretty much straight after the Captain Marvel trailer, so it sort of, you know, it sort of sucks the air out of the room a bit. Does that make sense?
Yeah, like, we just had a movie where a load of them died and we're waiting to find out whether they're going to be alive or not.
I mean,
what's going on?
But that was April, though. That's half a year. I know.
I don't care about
it. It's crazy.
What I'm saying. I don't care about the publicity machine. It doesn't interest me. I enjoy the movies to a certain extent. I enjoy some of the television series to a certain extent. I think the second Iron Fist royally pissed me off. And it's just like, do we really need Legends of Tomorrow? Do we really need Arrow or fucking Cloak? Do you know, do we really need these series? It's just, they're making use of us purely as an IP. And we'll run out soon and they'll be on to the next thing. Yeah. And it'll be video games or, I don't know, whatever it's going to be. Yeah.
Yeah. It's going to be an interesting next few years.
Yeah.
You know. I mean, Marvel, I mean, for me personally, I'm a big fan of the Marvel sort of formula and what they're doing. I know some people get a little bit tired of it, but they always hit home runs for me personally. There's a reason.
But you mean in relation to the Avengers series of movies? I mean, don't forget that Marvel is also other things. It's the Fantastic Four, which was a mess. It's the X-Men movies, which are becoming a mess.
To clarify it, the Marvel Studios films.
Yeah.
Okay, right. Yeah, because you have to sort of make that distinction now. Because, for instance, Venom's a Marvel movie. I'm not interested. I'm not going to go see that. I'm not, I can't be bothered, but I don't know. It's interesting.
Do we really need a Venom movie? Do we really?
No, we don't.
There's an advert going about on Facebook about the watch he wears on it. And I'm like, do we lack that cynicism?
Yeah. A lot of that comes from also that those films are a Sony product. Rather than it be like a straight up Marvel film. It's like when Justice League came out, there was an awful lot of adverts for cars and stuff that Batman.
Oh, Christ, that was horrible.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or the adverts with the X-Men for internet or something. Do you remember that?
Yeah. Or I remember I was in the States and I saw an X-Men one that was, I think it was the Quicksilver from the X-Men films. And it was a Doritos sort of advert or a pizza one. It was just ridiculous.
But I'm not a fool. I know we've had Hostess fruit pies and we've had all that sort of thing. Yeah, but to be, it did seem less cynical and less, it was a sweeter thing than this seems to be. And I don't know. I know it's all about money and I understand that, but it doesn't seem to be bouncing back for us, you know?
No.
For us in comics. No. I did
notice one thing. I saw it on Twitter. The AMC cinemas? They've got a chain of cinemas, AMC.
All right.
I think if you pre-book Venom tickets there, you get a Venom exclusive comic.
That's good.
That stuck out to me because we've talked about these sort of things that, you know, they should do things like this.
Finally. It's better than getting a Justice League drink cup. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or something like that. Or even a Captain America Winter Soldier print. I mean, they were nice enough, but you could have done a comic for that price,
Yeah. And then even then, like when you go to the cinema, you have to then go up and ask for these things, and it's just a faff, isn't it? If you've got you don't want to get these things before you go into the film, especially if it's really busy, because then you've got to do, roll it up, tuck it in your jacket or your bag or whatever.
Put it down your pants.
Depends on the film, though, doesn't it?
That's true. Porn parodies, let's watch them, they're more honest.
Are they?
You don't seem to see them anymore. Do you remember there was loads of porn parodies at one point?
Do not know what you're talking about.
there was literally a Justice League, or was it Avengers? It was the Avengers porn parody, and Quicksilver's costume looked better than it did in the movie.
But they get that's in the States, they get away with things like that because of the parody laws, don't they?
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah.
I always wonder about how that translates in the UK or things like that, you know. How far can you push?
Yeah, that is true. There's Doctor Screw in the TARDIS. That's obviously a classic series.
Yeah, that's a callback. You haven't said that. You haven't mentioned that for a while.
And I'll be watching it in my room at Thought Bubble if anyone wants to come and join me. Oh, no, it's already happened.
Yeah. So, we're sorry. Before we get into the comics, actually, I do, although it is comic sort of themed, I do have to put a small apology from me personally.
What was her name?
Her name is Claire Spiller.
Yes, you've got to mention that.
Yes, and when a couple of weeks ago...
She's going to literally beat you.
To death. That's what she told me on the Twitter direct messages that she's...
Didn't she draw a picture of a fist hitting you or something?
Over and over.
Don't draw too much into that, mate. Don't worry too much.
Are you sure
that.
You think that's right? So
yeah, I think it was just done in jest.
I think it was by the eighth panel when my head was essentially paste. I just thought, she may be upset.
Yeah.
No, all joking aside, though... we talked about the Wine and Zine anthology, which we absolutely love on this show, and hopefully it's done well at Thought
Bubble. It's in my must-buy list at Thought Bubble that I put online the other day.
So Tony's already got a copy in his hands as we speak. Remember Tony?
Yeah, I have, haven't I? Yeah, it went fine.
Yeah. And I ran through the book, talked about everything I loved, and obviously there's five stories in there, and I neglected.
We kept interrupting you. That's what happened. I remember this because I joined in, yeah. And I think that's where the problem happened. Because literally afterwards, when I was getting into my Betty Buys, I got a text from you going, "Oh fuck, I forgot to mention that one story."
Yeah, because it's five fantastic stories, and Claire's is equally as fantastic as all the others, and we're big fans of Claire's work anyway. Like her book, So, and I did.
I got a piece of original art for those.
Oh, yes, and I need to get some as well. Obviously, yeah. So, big shout out and apology to Claire Spiller. And we hope the book did well. I mean, I need to get a copy of that anyway. That like a proper printed copy.
And Claire, if you're listening, I will send you his address.
We also just need to say an apology for any future people listening, because we don't mean any of this, and she's not a violent person. She's actually very nice.
Not really, yeah. She's actually quite a nice person. She's not really violent, no.
No. Unless this is the last show I ever do, because she's hunted me down. Like the Van Damme film.
Or she will have hunted you down.
Yeah.
God, this is too confusing.
Like the film Hard Target. That's a class film, isn't it? I bet Dan loves that film.
Hard Target 2. Who's in Hard Target 2? Come on, you know this.
Yes.
He falls onto an elephant.
What?
Scott Adkins.
You confuse me with the elephant. Because
he falls down a hill onto an elephant.
Yeah, the thing that confused me. Because I thought you were talking about Tony Jaa then. You know, the guy from Back. Yeah. Yeah, so you confuse me.
Well, they make something, I think.
Scott Adkins, friend of the
past
show.
Past guest.
He'll never talk to us again. So a little bit of movie talk.
Yeah.
And should we talk about
some comics? I pointed out that I'm beginning to hate them. But that went all right, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't hate Tony. Come on.
I only watch movies made before 1980. I've told you this.
Yeah, I know. It shows.
Some great movies in the 70s. Look at those movies. Course, yeah. Compare them to movies now.
I tell you what. I am more interested in watching older films now. I don't know why.
Me too. Especially The Apartment again this week. I love fucking that sort of thing. I love those movies.
Yeah, and I love classic old black and white horror movies. Do you know what I mean? The Haunting and stuff like that. You know, Vincent Price and the early Hammer stuff.
Give me a movie with Jack Lemmon in. I'll watch it. I only watched it because Neil Simon died, but I love Jack Lemmon. Yeah. He's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Anyway,
there you go.
From Lemons.
Who's going
to
go first? You can go first.
Go on then. we've got a kind of structure to this show.
It surprised you.
It surprised me, but we do have a kind of we've got a few comics on the to read pile that we've managed to get through.
And I didn't manage to do mine last week, did I? So I've got a couple.
Yeah. So we've stored them up, and we thought we'd just have a few moments to just go through some of the list and talk about some of the great books. Now, the first one I'm going to talk about is a Comic House book.
Oh, okay.
Now, this was released at Thought Bubble. I think the physical copies are £5. It's...
Okay.
How many pages is it? I'm not sure how many pages it is. Oh, 30 pages, 233 panels, and 32 kills. Yes, this book...
Right, okay.
This book is 32 kills. So, co-created by Andy W. Clift and Mike Garley. The writer Mike Garley, art by Clift. Colours Nathan Ashworth. Letters Mike Stock. And, of course, Comic House have put this out. Now, it says it's a character-driven, high-octane noir tale of manipulation, loyalty and revenge. Hardly a word spoken in 30 pages. And this is an onslaught of action and dynamic sort of storytelling. They managed to get through loads of character sort of beats without a single word. I was lucky enough to get look at an early copy, and I believe the printed copies might have a little pull quote for me on the back.
Look at you.
Yeah, I know. I finally popped that cherry. Woo! I had to say something about this because it's an absolutely phenomenal book, and it's risen very quickly to the top of my choices for book of the year are going to be really difficult this year. And obviously Clift and Garley, no strangers to working together. They worked on a few things. Clift has obviously got a brilliant Captain Cosmic Kickstarter going at the moment, which is absolutely kicking ass. Congrats on that.
Yeah.
But this is something that just came out of the blue and like an absolute gunshot just got my attention immediately. It's a black and white sort of action tale, revenge action tale, totally in the vein of like John Wick or you know, that Kill Bill kind of vibe, where you've got this main sort of character who discovers something and then they just basically go into this building to exact revenge and is basically just kicking ass, all angles of ass. I mean, that sounds, you know, I've said it before on this show, those sort of storylines always appeal to me. The badass,
yeah,
who then steps up and then just absolutely just kicks a load, you know, just beats the shit out of loads of people. And that will always appeal to me. But when I saw how they actually achieved this in this book, I was like, right, okay.
Okay.
They've done it. It's completely different. Because all the pages, well, not all the pages, with the exception of a couple, they have a 16-panel structure.
That's bloody hell.
Yeah, that's what Andy's working to. So they're like tiny little, almost thumbnails.
Yeah.
And it just keeps this pace going. I mean, the pages are beautiful. I'd imagine, like, you know, if it was on a sort of a Comixology sort of, what do they call that? The guided view. Yeah, it would give it a, you know, supremely cinematic feel. It does have that kind of feel to it. But just looking at the pages on their own is a thing of beauty. As you're just seeing this main sort of character, and I don't believe she has a name. It's one of those classic sort of thing. You're just following a badass, just go through, and just taking people out on all levels. It's superior action storytelling for me. This. There's, you know, from like seeing like proper fist fights take place over like the space of like five panels to just a close up shot of a face, like as someone is being shot, you know, and just seeing the facial expressions, which I think Andy's just, you know, he's just improving with every single panel he does. And when he's got to,
does Andy sleep at the moment?
I don't think he does, because you know, yeah, he's been extremely prolific recently,
yeah,
and that's what I mean. I think the guys have been, this has been in gestation for quite some time. It's a labour of love. That's just my big word of the week.
Nice. Good.
Yeah.
Dan will be proud of you.
Thanks. That one's for you, Dan. Yeah, so, you know, every panel and every story beat has been meticulously plotted out to perfection. And when I say that there's like 16 panels on a page, some of them are like one image split into four panels, if that makes sense. Like Andy's really experimenting and playing with like the panel structure and form. Yeah.
So it's the same image, but it's kind of, there's lines going down the middle of it.
Yeah.
So I get you. Yeah. I kind of like that, playing with that. Yeah.
And so much so that you have a couple of flashback pages, but the structure, you know, there's not so many panels. It's not loads of little panels, it's a couple of larger panels. So you immediately, from a narrative standpoint, you know that this is something different and takes you somewhere else.
Right.
How
many panels on a page? What's the most?
16.
Right, I might have you beat later, but let's see. Let's wait and see.
Ooh. Ooh. Yeah, I mean, he's working to a standard 16-page sort of panel structure. And there's one sort of spread, which is clearly a double-page spread. With what's 16 times 2? 32. I don't do maths normally on this. Yeah, 32, but set over a double page spread. And like the center of it, which is probably 12 panels, is an explosion. And like the action sort of rises outwards from there. It's just wonderfully done. I like this kind of story, but the storytelling that these guys have put on
That's a hell of a trick to write. I wonder whether he thumbnailed it out as part of his writing process. It'd be interesting to know, wouldn't it?
I mean, like when Mike does comics, Mike seemingly sort of does the sort of comics that are really are on my wavelength. You know, the sort of films that he likes, and you know, whether it be action films, horror films, because I know he always puts out some horror themed stuff around like Halloween and stuff. And he's got a new project out at the moment, which is coming soon. I think it's called Our Last Halloween or Our Final Halloween, something.
Oh,
like
this
that.
Is the thing that is the Kickstarter that ends on Halloween, then you get the comic on Halloween. Is that one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He does that every year, which I love, you know, that sort of stuff. But it's great to see Mike and Andy come together for this. And 32 Kills is, spot on. I need to get a hard copy of this. And I just think it sort of ends on a sort of story point which is quite final, and yet there's a question mark when it says the end, because I think much like it's got I think John Wick is a cheap sort of shortcut, but I think that's the best way I can say it. The story, you know, this one shot just absolutely does its job, but by the end of it, you're left wanting more, and they've sort of set the seed, you know, they've planted the seeds of a potential universe that they can expand on, this criminal universe. So, it's great stuff. There's a lot of back matter. There's a prequel comic. There's character sketches, like pinups, and a short story. So it's great stuff. 32 Kills by Comic House. You can get it on their website, and no doubt that you'll be able to find it from the good.
I'm never a big fan of a story that just ends and that's the whole story. Because I think life's not like that, is it? Nothing in life is like that.
A one shot sort of story. You're not necessarily.
Well, I like to think that it continues, and I would be open to it continuing.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I'm not one of these people who think, look at that. I'm there. Like, what happened to those weird people with the funny feet in that film about the mountain and the rings? Where did they go after that?
Are you talking about Lord of the Rings, Tony?
Yep. What's that joke? What's that one about hairdressers in space? One of them's fucked his sister and they're all made of Lego. And one of them's a pedal bin. What's that one? What happens after that?
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
Yeah.
So you're not necessarily a fan of a story that just say set.
No, I like a lovely story that's well written and has a beginning and end. But I'm not one of these people who goes there shouldn't be a sequel, because there is a sequel in life, isn't there?
Yeah.
You know, and
well,
I think
that's deep.
Well, but their life isn't just a story. Do you know what I mean?
No.
Oh, look at these two people they met and they fell in love and they got married. Well, then their life's a misery.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the rest of the story, isn't it? And then they die sad.
I mean, most
trapped
stories
in a loveless
are
marriage.
Yeah. Stories are essentially, when they work the best, it's almost like there was a beginning and there was an after, and you've just happened to drop in on this.
Yeah, exactly.
This moment in time.
I remember lending someone a volume of Preacher, and it's the one where he's the sheriff. Do you remember that one?
Mm.
And they said to me, "Well, I didn't get the story before this happened." I said, "Well, so," and I said, "It explains it. It's explained." Yeah, but I wanted to start from the beginning, and I said, Do you watch Coronation Street? Yeah, and this bloke loved Coronation Street. And I said, have you watched that from the beginning? And he went, well, no, obviously. And I said, well, there you go.
Yeah.
That's what happens.
Yeah.
Drop in the middle of it.
Yeah.
I quite like reading comics and dropping into the middle of a story, but I find it more...
It depends on the comic. Some, we've said it on this show before that it feels like you've dropped into a moment in someone's life and that works brilliantly. But what necessarily... Well, what keeps me away from some of the bigger two books is you get in and you just lost because, they're a storyline. I was looking at an X-Men cover recently and I looked at it and I thought, oh, is that the name of that character now? Do you know what I mean? I felt like I'd missed out on something and I'd be a little
lost.
I
think it's slightly different now because comics are a continuity mess everywhere.
Yeah.
But I used to like dropping into a story and thinking, oh, who's he? What's happened there? Why is she there? Where's she? What's happened to that? You know what I mean? I kind of like it was like the detective in me as a kid used to try and work out why the thing was stranded on another planet, or why the human torch didn't have his powers or something like that. But now it's like, fuck me, you've had to have read 45 comics this week just to figure out what's going on.
And I think that's the issue with a lot of it, because obviously I have a basic idea of what these characters are. I mean, sometimes I know a bit more about them. But, for instance, I'd never read much Moon Knight. And then
good at the moment.
James Gibbs, very kindly, I think it was London Super Comic Con.
No, I bought you that.
Oh, you bought me there. Oh, yeah, but he loves Moon Knight, doesn't he? You gifted me the Moon Knight, that volume. And that was perfect for someone that only had a tangential sort of, like, idea of what the character was. So I could just pick it up. Do you know what I mean? There was no... I didn't feel lost by it.
They keep going on about this quote from Stan, but nobody ever seems to take any fucking notice of it, that every comic is someone's first comic. I keep hearing people saying, oh, yeah, C.B. Sabowski keeps saying it. And I'm like, well, how does that work with your company?
Yeah.
It doesn't,
Yeah.
And I kind of like that. I mean, even if it's part of a storyline, it's a little explanation. It's not overly complicated and there's not a crossover with fucking three different other books. And I mean, we did our little cover thing today, didn't we?
Yeah.
Well,
as it stands, I've still got to do mine.
But, we don't on yours yet. Yeah, no, okay. No. And there was the X-Men Gold issue with, and it's got Kitty Pryde walking through the X-Men, a graveyard, and not on all the gravestones. They're X-Men's.
That's exactly the cover I was talking about just a second ago.
Oh, was it? Okay. Yeah. And I thought, I'm about three issues behind on X-Men Gold. I thought, have they all died? Did I miss something?
Mm.
You know, and it probably didn't even happen in X-Men Gold. It happened in X-Men Blue Annual or something. You know, it's like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a lovely cover, though.
It's an interesting cover, and it does draw you in. And it, I like, we won't get onto covers now, but I like a cover that tells a story.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I like something that has, and that does tell a story, you know. Yeah. That's why I liked it, you know.
Yeah, I mean, for those who don't necessarily know, like every Wednesday, like we've taken up, like going through a Comixology, just browsing through their new releases and just picking covers. You don't have to buy them, you know. I can't afford to buy them, some of them. But you just look at their new releases, pick the covers that you like most, now and then we post them on Twitter. And sometimes it's a design perspective, but sometimes I'll just pick a cover.
But I can see in your two eyes, because you're both graphic designers, aren't you?
Yeah.
Is that I view it in a different way, and I can see where you two are coming from, and you two come from a similar point of view, and I come from a slightly different point of view.
Yeah, and that's what I find interesting.
I rarely choose the same ones.
Yeah, that's what I find interesting about us three doing it, because we've all got different views on doing it. And sometimes I'll pick something quite random purely because that cover has told a story, or it's given a story element that makes you go, "Oh, what's going on there?" Which is the complete that achieves what a cover should do.
I don't think you can say yes or no. I think sometimes weather balloons do work on a cover.
Yeah, yeah.
No, and I think occasionally it's worth it doing that. You know,
I put one on a red mask cover, so I can't.
There you go.
So there you go. Anyway, from covers to other comics, what is your first recommendation?
My first recommend is Saga Volta Book 1, which is out of Europe Comics that Irinia sent us to read. Nice. It's actually $3.99 digitally. It was published by Lombard in Belgium previously, written by Benoit Beckert and Jean Dufault, and art by Mohamed Awomri. It's obviously digital only because it's Europe Comics, so it's a digital only thing. It is all right. There's a few names here. I'm going to sound like a right prat saying them. Are you ready?
Yep, go for
it. Valgar Volta is the barbarian son of Halgar the Golden Haired. He's hooked up with a girl called Astrida and had a baby with her. But her dad, get this, is called Thorgur. He isn't happy, and he's also something of a maniac with a sort of one of those sort of scary maniac scarred faces. He's probably not the father-in-law that you really want. So Thorgar and his 100 warriors. That's cool. I like that. Someone with 100 warriors. That sounds cool, doesn't it, to you? Does that sound like this?
Amazing.
This team. He's decided to hunt down Valgar, and he's stolen away his wife and his daughter. And so Valgar vows to get back at him, get his family back. And he's in the forest, and he comes across this disgusting monster. It's this like weird fucking monster. And he gets a magical lance off this monster. And the monster then says, right, if you go and get this cloak, give me the cloak, and I'll help you get back your family, sort of thing. And then it just sort of becomes this sort of epic journey after that. I'll be honest with you, I'm not a big fantasy guy. It is down to mostly to these sort of weird made-up names that I can't keep track of, and it winds me up. And a lot of
But how is that different to science fiction?
I know, but you do get Bryans and Grahams in science fiction, don't you? You know. Yeah. And also, there's a lot of sort of weird elf. I only read them when Brian or Brian Graham, Brian Graham or Jamie.
Someone needs to create a science fiction character called Brian Graham.
Brian Graham and his friend Jamie, and also weird elves who look like they couldn't pick up, you know, the shopping from Tesco's, but apparently they're really powerful with a sword and stuff. And it's all annoying.
Yeah, that is the one thing. Obviously, my friend Dan Chan. The one thing he hates about the fantasy genre is elves.
The
vitriol I've heard from this man about elves, because he thinks exactly the same.
I do feel like we have certain feelings that are the same in a number of areas, you and your friend Dan, in that we hate things really a lot.
With the power of a thousand suns.
Yeah, I mean, I read Lord of the Rings when I was a kid, and it was all right, and I thought bits of it went on too long. And I watched the Lord of the Rings movies, and then the bit at the end where it just closes up on the Hobbit's eyes for about 15 minutes at the end.
Look, I won't hear a bad word said about those films, so move on.
And And it's like, and then they made the thing about hobbits, and that was just boring, so I didn't watch that anyway. And oh, you haven't seen Game of Thrones, like, you know what I mean? But anyway, so I bought this. I have to say, I really fucking liked it. I was looking, because I've been on this sort of epic European reading splurge. I was looking for something that was sort of heroic fiction. And I wanted something with this sort of really sort of nice Enrico Marino style art, you know, this yeah. real sort of realistic, violent, you know, slightly sexy kind of art. And I found this and I thought, oh, there, this looks good. Mm. And it is really good. The panels in this book, there is more going on in a single panel than there is in whole comics, you know, elsewhere. Just absolutely gorgeous. Pardon the reminder, but a bastard has no rights. I thought that's quite a good line as well.
That's a good line.
And it's set on this sort of really epic grand stage, and it's full of sort of handsome heroes and totally grotesque villains. There's this villain that lives in the woods in this sort of cave, and he's this horrible crab-like thing with multiple arms and legs, but he's got this sort of weird human face. And it's just disgusting, and he sort of meets up with the hero, and they become almost sort of allies. And there's this chase through the woods, which is just absolutely page-turningly exciting. It's full of, they do the sort of period fantasy specific language where everything's thous and those and, you know, this sort of thing. Mm. Sort of faux Shakespearean almost without the iambic pentameter. But it's got a real pace to it. Really, really nice. And it's a cracking adventure series. I've read the first volume now, and I've bought the second two. Arrhenia obviously clearly is become my drug dealer. so I've gone and bought the next two. There's a narration to it, which I was reminded by Stocky, because Stocky put a thing on the Facebook page, didn't he, about using scrolls as word boxes in comics. And this has a really nice scroll-like sort of narration panels. And it's done as a sort of unrolled scroll, if everyone knows what I'm talking about there, which is nice, and it's a nice touch. But what they add to it is that it's got sort of tatty and browned edges, and it's falling apart a bit, and it's like this sort of ancient scroll. And really nice, really some really great lettering skills on the show, which you don't always get in the translated books. I think we've really improved in that area. I remember when we first started the show and we started talking about some translated books, and we said the lettering's a bit in the middle of a panel, you know, and they haven't resized the balloon and all that sort of thing. But with this, they really do. They take real care with it.
It's flawless. The translation in like most of these books I'm seeing, whether it be from Europe Books, a new book or whatever, just really just completely stepped up on it.
It really has. Yeah, it has. And
which is phenomenal when you think of the job that they've got to do.
That was my main problem with a lot of translated books, is it read like a translation from someone whose English was their second language almost, or they weren't they weren't particularly competent with English as they were as their other languages, and it had a sort of broken staccato quality to it, and it wasn't always completely written correctly, you know. But these ones are just flawless. Various sort of axes. The armor looks so good. The art and the weathered leathers and furs and the armor and all this sort of thing. The men are not all these sort of heroic. A lot of them are grubby and battle worn, and they've all got sort of scars and all this sort of thing. And it is great. There's the sort of shield maiden thing going on that you got in the Vikings TV series. Is similar to that. So there's that sort of Scandinavian thing. At one point, he's caught in a sort of fort. The old classic story. They're in a fort and they're surrounded by what are referred to as the devourers, you know, these sort of almost human cannibal creatures that are controlled or just about controlled by the villains in the story. And when the devourers attack the village, it's proper chills. Absolutely. You know, really,
I love that
really
name as well. I love names.
Yeah, me
like
too
for bad guys.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, me too, totally. The story does wander a bit, and you do kind of lose track of what, hang on a minute, wasn't he meant to be searching for this wife, and now he's in this sort of fort and stuff like that. Yeah. But you don't mind because it's so fucking gorgeous, you know.
Yeah.
Very highly recommended. It was in a sale for Europe Comics, not currently, but if you keep an eye out on Comixology for sales, they always have the odd thing going on. Saga Volta, currently 3 volumes. Go to europecomics.com or at Europe Comics on Twitter. Sign up to their mailing list, actually, because they send you some notifications and they tell you when the sales are on. And I hopefully will have just met Arrhenia at Thought Bubble, because I'm what the intention was to do a short interview with her. So
nice.
I'm hoping we managed to do that. She just emailed me back. I was sending some questions. She emailed me back saying, oh, yeah, they're great. So we'll have a chat.
You may hear that in a future show.
Mm. Yeah, hopefully next week. Yeah, yeah, with any luck, that'll be good.
Yeah.
So that's my one. Yeah, another Europe comics. Yes, I know I'm predictable, but they are so good.
Yeah.
You know, them and Humanoids at the moment are just like my go-to companies. I can't stop reading them. Yeah.
So, cool. Yeah, we've got more reviews to come. But first, we had a couple of cheeky little quotes. I mean, we put a last-minute shout-out to you lovely people on social media. Some of you got back to us, so thank you very much for that. So we've got a couple of little questions. We thought we'd just break up the monotony of our mundane voices with a couple of questions. So here's an interesting one from Rob Jones, the man from Madness, who... I've got to say, massive shout out on the weight loss he's had over the past like 6 months.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, astounding stuff. So hopefully you're in good health, Rob. But he says, what takes a great comic and truly makes it legendary in status?
Oh, God.
That's it's an interesting one. If you think about, think of what you would consider to be a legendary comic, Tony. You know, name one off the top of your head now.
Kirby's Fantastic Four.
Okay. Oh, God, blimey, that's a bit obvious, isn't it?
I was trying to make it, because if you ask me, then I'm going to say, you know, my go-tos are Killraven and, you know, Shang-Chi and Iron Fist. And,
I think Fantastic Four is an interesting one, so let's look at that one, because, you know, because the question is, what takes a great comic and truly makes it legendary in status? I would argue, obviously Fantastic Four is a product of its time, and it was phenomenal, and we know how it changed the landscape of things in comics. Kirby's art is Kirby. Do you know what I mean?
It's also, for me, and this is slightly sacrilegious, it's the most... not reined in, but maybe reined in, but he's really... controlled, and it's some of the best concise storytelling he was doing for a while.
Yeah.
And I know he went over to the Fourth World and stuff like that after that, and that went a bit nuts. And then when he came back to Marvel, we had, you know, Devil Dinosaur and Machine Man and stuff like that, and that was also out there. And I enjoy it for different reasons, but I think it's a soap opera. It's a cosmic soap opera, isn't it? Fantastic Four.
But I would say for that one, it's Kirby's artwork and that certainly makes it legendary. I would say
Stanley. Let's not forget Stanley.
I know Stan, but I don't think that the story holds up much in this day and age. I mean, I think it's fantastic, but it's of its time.
I don't know. What about Galactus coming to Earth? I think that's a great storyline. I think
you're talking about the first comic, the first issue, aren't you? Do you know what I mean?
Of what?
Of Fantastic Four. Is that what we're talking about?
No, the run, I meant.
Are you talking about the run itself? Oh, well, that's completely different, because then you've got story arcs and, you know, obviously. But I always think that issue one is considered legendary, obviously.
I don't think issue one is anywhere near the standard of how we got to, from 30 onwards. But,
more people will talk about Fantastic Four number one than they will some of these fantastic, you know, issue 32, 30, you know, all of the mid ones. Obviously
I don't know, because you had the, what's the first one the Black Panther's in? I forget the number now. The Silver Surfer.
That's an early one, isn't it? Yeah.
Is it 40-something?
Yeah, you've got... But then it's the first appearances that make that notable. Does that make sense?
Yeah, there's more to it than that. There's more to just the first... I mean, you realise the implications of this character, the Black Panther Galactus and Silver Surfer and the humans and,
I think, you know, that's obviously a marvellous run, pardon the pun, and quite, you know, a legendary run on the characters that probably, you know, not many people have equaled since. But if you're talking about individual storylines, the ones that are the ones that are probably people would pick out, you know, the people that haven't necessarily read them, you know, or read, you know, a long line, they will probably pick out the big events. They will pick out the first appearances of Black Panther, you know, or when Galactus arrives, or did Silver Surfer appear in Fantastic Four first?
Yeah,
he did, yeah. So I think with the older comics, the ones that people you know, for a lot of people, what makes them legendary, if I, you know, addressing the question, is the big moments and the big artists and the big stories. It's definitely, you know, because there were so many comics around that time, you know, you can't say, and this is going to sound sacrilegious, obviously, I'm saying the whole run of that, how many issues do they do?
Over 100.
Over 100 Kirby was on, wasn't he? And these amazing stories, but you can't say every single one of them was absolutely killer and no filler.
I think, though, as runs go, I think that's the closest to it being that. I can't think of any other runs that are 100 issues long and were consistently that good.
Oh, well. I mean, there's going to be people listening to this pod now just going, what about this? What about that?
Yeah, they're probably wrong, though, to be fair.
I mean, I didn't read all of it, but, you know, I know the Ultimate Spider-Man had a pretty impressive run, didn't it? Bagley and
it was good. Bendis. Yeah, it was good. And they were going for that record, weren't they? They were going for the Stanley Kirby record. I would say probably Burns X-Men as well. I think Burns X-Men is a classic. If you go to 137, Death of Phoenix.
Okay, legendary. Let's go for another angle then. What about Alan Moore's Swamp Thing? What makes that legendary in comics? Because that is a go-to point that I hear so much from so many people.
It wasn't a huge... Everyone goes on, oh, yeah, he took a character and did something really good with it. But then again, look at the Bernie Wrightson stuff. It was Len Wein, Bernie Wrightson stuff was incredible as well. Yeah,
Bernie Wrightson, end of, isn't it? You know,
And just beautiful and just, like, wacky as fuck. Some of it, you know, spacemen and all sorts. But the it was because he made it into this genuinely sort of creepy horror story.
Yeah.
You know, the anatomy lesson and all that sort of thing, I think. Mm. To me, that's maybe the one. It was literary, I suppose, but also fucking really creepy, you know, like really pushing the limits of the comics code, which I think it did push out, didn't it?
Yeah.
It was, and I remember, is it issue 21? Is that the anatomy lesson? I can't remember now, but I remember that being a huge book at the time. Like that was like, you couldn't get, you know, 16-year-old kid or whatever I was at the time, it was like, I couldn't afford the 21 quid or the 50 quid or whatever it was to get an issue, you know, a copy of it. Yeah. It was a real sort of shelf book.
I think time is an important, it is probably the most important factor when talking about legend, you know, if you're going to use the word legendary as well.
Yeah.
And I think certainly it's a shame. I mean, people talk about the 90s being the boom period and all, you know, these bad books that came out. And I think it's a shame that some of the books there do get a bit overlooked in terms of what they...
I mean, the Vertigo sort of books were classics at the time, weren't they? That was what was fighting it. You know, Show the Changing Man and Swamp Thing and Hellblazer and Sandman. Yeah. You know, these sort of books. You know?
Yeah.
Let me pose this question to you then. What is a recent classic? What is the most recent book you can think of that is a classic?
A recent classic?
Yeah.
What?
That will be remembered as a classic.
Right, okay. Oh, that's hard to say because you can say great runs or great stories. I mean, the first thing that came to my mind, but it's, I don't know, because I think it's amazing, but I'm not sure whether people see it as a classic. The Vision 12 issue series.
Yeah, that's a good shout.
For me, I think it's easier to say this is a classic run of that character. And you know, someone that's not necessarily au fait with Vision and stuff, I just think that's perfect. And a lot of people go scream now, if you're talking about that, the new Mr. Miracle line, which I haven't caught up on, but, you know, people are talking about that like it's...
I would throw into the mix the Immortal Iron Fist, I think.
Are you talking about the
Brubaker Fraction one? Yeah, And I would also throw Hawkeye, the David Yager one.
Really? The thing that goes against that was the way it sort of peters out and delays at the end, isn't it?
Yeah, that's true. That is true. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, let me go for another one then. Scalped.
Oh yes, that's one of those. I say an underrated classic? Do you know? You know when there's a classic film that not enough people know about?
Yeah.
Scalped is that, isn't it? Because Scalped is something that just absolutely...
Scalped is absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
For those who haven't read it, it is probably the best crime book I've read in a long time.
Yeah,
and it is so brutal.
Yeah,
you know, it doesn't stop. And
Yeah.
People die and people turn, and yeah. you know,
I've got so much left to read, actually.
It's allegedly it's a TV series soon, isn't it? I don't know. Yeah. Not that I'm obviously railing against TV series, but it's
I can imagine that could be done very well.
Yeah.
Oh, there you go. There's some interesting ones. Oof.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Exterminators. The Exterminators. How about that one?
What, are you talking about the Tony Moore? The one about all the insects and the cockroaches.
And
really?
Yeah,
did you like that? I mean,
I think that's
crazy.
I think that's a bit of a hidden classic. Yeah. But that's a while ago still. Even these books we just mentioned there are a while ago, aren't they?
Yeah.
What's out at the moment that we think will be a classic? What is a comic?
Well, I mean, obviously.
Mr. Miracle's a good shout.
Mr. Miracle's
a good
shout.
Good. Difficult, isn't it?
It is difficult. I mean,
I'm going to say Exo Man of War. I genuinely think that is a beautiful, incredible book. I really do.
Yes, but I
painted,
think...
painted.
You know, I think... It the only thing that will holds titles like that back, and certainly a lot of them, are the mainstream. Do you know what I mean? It's one of those critically acclaimed by everyone, but not enough people are reading it.
Nobody's buying it.
Whereas when people talk about legendary sort of books or these classics, normally they're talking about the big two because that's what most people have read, haven't they?
And unless how about this then? Still coming out and a classic. Usagi Yojimbo.
Oh yeah, I mean that's legendary all around anyway because of the nature of that character.
Yeah.
Ooh. I think we need to do a whole show.
I think we answered that one, didn't we?
I think we need to do a whole show about classics.
I think the difference between a classic, personally, a classic that everyone thinks of, and what they call an evergreen book.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you have like X Men stories. You know, they've done graphic novel collections that X Men classics. Do you know what I mean? These storylines.
And there's not that many books that are constantly on sale, are there? Yeah. You've obviously got Watchmen, Dark Knight.
I know one.
Inkle.
Shout out to Dan Butcher. Invincible surely got to go down as an epic. I mean, they told. How many issues was Invincible?
100 and something, isn't it?
100 and something, yeah. I mean, I know Dan's a lover of that book, but. And that's impressive. I think in terms of like the Image lot, and that's it. And Savage Dragon, just because he won't stop making it.
I still buy that. I'm probably one of the few people in the world with that on my pull list. I actually love that series. Yeah. It's one of my first reads. It's just fun and mental. And I think he just does it to wind people up. Yeah.
And of course, the four issues of Awesome Comics are going to be seen.
Obviously.
Legendary classics. Anyway, so the other question we got is from Alan Henderson, from the Mighty Penguins. He says, if you were writing your wills and could only leave one piece of your collection to each of your other presenters, who would you leave what to? Oh, this is such a good question that I wish I had days to think about.
That's a hard one, isn't it?
Yeah, that is a...
Oh.
I think that's one of the best questions we've had.
Because there's stuff that I'd like you to read that you haven't read yet. For example, I think Dan would fucking love Mage, and I'm looking that across the room.
Yeah,
and I think maybe give him that. But then again, I'd probably want you to have something that was like meant a lot to me in a way. You know, so some of the artwork I've got.
Yeah, you can only leave one piece of your collection. One piece. I'd love any bits of your artwork.
I'd leave you my left ball, Pascal.
Leave
my other ball, Xavier.
Oh, why have I got to have Pascal? He's a racist.
Pascal's the cooler one. No, he's not a racist. Bring that back.
No.
No.
Oh, dear. Top question, Alan. That's stumped me as. Because I don't have a massive collection of original art. I try to pick a book in my collection that I think Tony hasn't read. Which, anyone who knows Tony, that's...
I would give you all the copies of Flash Gordon that have my name in them.
What, you mean every copy of Flash Gordon? Copy
available in a bargain bin near you now.
Yeah. Oh, you're never in a bargain bin with our listeners' hearts, Tony. So I think we might have to come back to that. It's almost like a desert island disc, and we need Dan, don't we? To see what.
Oh, I like that desert island disc episode. Yeah, that was fun.
Last one, Kirk Spencer.
Oh yeah.
Any of us fans of Sergeant Rock?
Yeah, I know Kirk is a huge DC War Comics fan, isn't he?
Mm.
And I have got they weren't essentials, were they? What, the DC one, Showcase? I've got the Sergeant Rock ones sitting opposite me. And, I mean, I love them for the... I'm a huge fan of Kubert. Ending Kubert touches. Some of those covers are just some of the best covers in comics, you know?
Yeah.
Just gorgeous stuff, yeah. I like Sergeant Rock. I do think that the War Comics have been... We've ignored the War Comics on this pod, haven't we? We haven't really talked about them. You don't see enough of them, I suppose.
But there may be a genre show with the War Comics. That might be
worth having a look at.
A good chat. Yeah, we're in the process of planning that as we speak. So maybe War Comics is a good one, actually.
Yeah.
It's
weird. I'd like to see another Sergeant Rock comic come out. I think I'd like that. I think they're actually really beautiful. A lot of them are really sort of touching, sort of poignant stories, you know.
Yeah.
About the sort, it's not like, you know, oh, let's go and kill all the Nazis. There are actually some really touching stories amongst all that, you know, really, and they use the medium to tell some interesting stuff.
Yeah,
you know, it's like sci-fi is used to tell stories about modern society. I think they did that a bit with Sergeant Rock back in the day, you know.
Mm. And this show
good stuff.
This show is to show you how not to live your life. So
yeah, exactly.
So there you go. Thank you for those questions.
Yes, thank you very much.
But we've got a couple more books to talk about. You go first this time, Tony, with our second round.
Oh. Okay, let me find a bit of paper. Throw this down on. Right, I'm going to go with... Now, this was a cover choice of mine last week. It's from a new comic company called Ahoy Comics. It is written by Tom Payer, art by Jamal Eigel, inks by Juan Castro, colours Andy Troy, letters Bob Steen, and it's The Wrong Earth. Have you read this yet, by the way?
I haven't read it, but I saw the cover because that's a striking cover.
It's a great cover, isn't it? Right, really good use of colour, and it again tells a story. Do you know what I mean? It's that two sides of it.
Yeah.
What are you going to say, mate? Sorry.
I've been aware of Jamal's work for quite some time. He's a great artist.
Yeah. His DC work and stuff I really enjoyed. Yeah. And this is... I was chatting to somebody about this week, and I was thinking that with... certain, you know, there's a lot of little companies popping up now, aren't there? And we've had, I know it's only an imprint, but we had, you know, Punk's Not Dead and Black Crown and all that little company popping up. And there's these little imprints popping up here and there. And Ahoy Comics is something that just came out of nowhere for me, really. You know, it's got some extras in it, which I'll talk a tiny bit about in a minute. But the main story, it fills the first half of the comic. And it's a very... it's a fairly sort of simple story, actually. There's nothing hugely amazing about it, and it's something that's probably been done before. But it's imagine for a second that the characters are Batman in this comic. They're heavily hinted at. This is very similar to the Batman mythos. So imagine if Batman 66 is in one bit of it, you know, so the Batman from the Adam West TV series, and the other Batman. So there's two stories told. One is about the 66 Batman, and one is about a sort of grim and gritty, not quite the Dark Knight, but certainly a grim and gritty Batman. But they're actually about Dragonfly Man. So he's called Dragonfly in the sort of gritty bit, and he's called Dragonfly Man in the new bit, in the 66 bit. And he's got it opens on the 66 style stuff in Fortune City, Earth Alpha. And as classic comics are, Dragonfly Man and his... sort of man-child assistant sidekick is called Stinger, and they're obviously tied to a table while lasers are sort of pinging around, and the villain is sitting outside, and the villain's got a real sort of prisoner-esque vibe about him. His henchmen wear bowler hats and have got numbers on the side of their lapels and stuff like that. And it's the story basically goes to the point where what if they crossed over into each other's reality, how would that happen. Fortune Earth is Earth Amiga, and that's where the sort of grim and gritty Dragonfly is battling sort of a load of punk sadomasochistic looking baseball bat wielding villains, and he's getting a bit of a kicking, but he comes off well because he sets fire and kills them all, you know. So there's this real sort of difference between them, even in the sort of the inks, the heavier inks that are used. And then they sort of cross over into each other's reality, and the story then continues from there on. How do they cope with the reality of each other's kitschy reality and the reality of this other reality? The police are corrupt and will kill you. And it's not a big idea. I mean, we saw Batman in his various guises in What was that Ellis and Cassidy thing? Planetary. Do you remember there was a Planetary Batman? Did you ever read that?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, I didn't read it, but yeah, I know.
That's a good comic. Mm. That's really good. Yeah. Yeah. And there's a bit of that in that. And there's always these things in the, you know, the Justice League once a year would team up with the Justice Society and, you know, various versions of the Justice League in the sort of multiverse. And so it's something that isn't particularly original. It's just done so nicely in here. It, and this has got two things going for it, which I sort of figured out. These are the two things that have made it appeal to me. One is it's just fucking fun. You know, it's a fun, original comic. Which, and it's not tied down to continuity, and you kind of know where it's going because it's the art of it is so good. Eigel and Castro, they managed to portray the different eras with a bit of respect, but also sort of vibrantly their own reality. And it is, it's just a bit of fun, and I'm going to keep going with it because I just enjoyed it. It just made me chuckle. Yeah. It's quite iconic. There's some sort of backup stuff. There's a Fortune Comics. They've done a sort of faux old school comic about Stinger, and that's quite fun. There's a Grant Morrison text piece in it, obviously. You know, Grant, it sings Grant Morrison, this story, doesn't it? You know, this sort of multiversal thing. Oh, it really does. You know, he's sort of big on that. There's a couple of interviews and a couple of adverts for other books that are coming out. So, yeah, I'll keep an eye out to Ahoy Comics. I can see them having a little bit of a quiet revolution somewhere around. But, yeah, real fun. If you go to comicsahoy.com or Ahoy Comic Mags at Twitter, you'll find something about them. Yeah, good fun. That's my next one.
Nice. Yeah. So my second one of the night is a comic that was sat opposite us at Cardiff Expo this year.
Oh, okay.
It's from Dead Star Publishing, and it's Seven Shades.
Oh.
Now this is created and plotted by.
It's about like 50 Shades.
No, it's better than that. Oh. Although I wouldn't know, I haven't read it, unlike you, Tony.
No, I'll do the audiobook.
Oh my word! What was the most disgusting word you had to say when you read the audiobook?
Well, I needed my hands free, so I didn't want to. You know.
Oh, I'm just gonna leave that there. But Seven Shades is a supernatural western comic miniseries. Now, it's created and plotted by David Clifford and Peter Rogers, written by Peter Rogers with art by David Clifford. It's a supernatural western comic and which follows the misadventures of Samael Jehoshaphat Hicks. What an amazing name for a character in a western. As he stumbles to find a way out from under the influence of his six outlaw half-brothers, set within the godforsaken town
Bobs.
Of... Yeah, obvs. Set within the godforsaken town of Seven Shades, which hides sinister secrets and unimaginable terrors. We all know a place like that. Hicks must somehow find a way to save his sister Elsabeth before it's too late. That's the standard setup, but this is it's great. It's great fun. It's a wonderfully sort of dark take on the western genre. One that I think is unusual in every aspect, really. It's not what you think it's going to be. It's gloriously OTT in others and in other sort of respects. And it's most certainly not safe for work at points.
Right.
It's a mature book, but I think it's also got its tongue very heavily in its cheek. Issue 4 begins with a couple of characters in a precarious position. That both surprised me and made me laugh in equal measure, and I'm not even gonna do a screenshot on the Awesome Comics Talk because I don't think I can. The book has no. The book has sort of it's that kind of sense of humour to it that's quite dark. There's a moment where the main character sort of aims to free someone sort of hanging from a rope. Kind of like The Good and the Bad and the Ugly, you know, that classic sort of setup they're doing.
Okay.
But in this book, it doesn't quite go the same. And that made me laugh. I mean, those moments, I'm saying, make it seem like a comedy book. It has black humour throughout it. I wouldn't say it's strictly comedy.
Yeah.
I know Dave's artwork has that sort of strange, sort of cartoony look to it, which is great. I mean, I know him from Dexter's Half Dozen.
He does
that with Jamie Lambert, which is a great like indie series that's very quietly sort of plugging away. That one's about sort of World War II.
Okay.
Yeah. They also put out sort of like 4-page sort of ash cans for free that people can, like little photocopied books that people can just come up and get from their table, which I think is great.
That's good. That's an idea.
Yeah, that's an idea I just want to steal. I think they're like A6. They're four pages, just sort of A6. It's great.
Okay.
But yeah, Dave's work in Seven Shades is something that I think demands attention, I think, because he's hand-painted each page and sort of refined his quirky sort of angular style into something. I mean, honestly, you see his art, you don't see that anywhere else. It's definitely, you know, it's got its own sort of style, which I think you need to. I mean, you know, there's no point in copying anyone else, just be, especially on the indie scene. You just got to be your own sort of artist, and Dave definitely does that. I mean, one of the things I love about it, looking at the pages, like on the, I mean, these are just on PDF, so I need to get hard copies, but you can actually, from the scanning, you can actually see the canvas on the page scans. And I love that sort of texture it adds to it. You know, I absolutely adored like seeing that sort of texture, because you don't normally see that. You know, normally like they'll scan something and they'll clean it up, and you know, you can't tell what's a painting and what's not in a lot of comics these days.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so yeah. I love that. I think they've been putting these books out at quite a pace, I think, because I was under the impression that they launched issues 1 and 2 at Cardiff when we were there.
Yeah.
And there's another 2 issues out or coming out, which is amazing. So they're already on 4 issues.
Okay.
I think, you know, if I'm being honest, I think the artwork in later issues loses a little bit of polish. I think that's more noticeable when you sit down to sort of read all in one go, like I did. It was on my to read pile, and I thought, right, I've been wanting to read this for a while, let's go through it. I really enjoyed it, but I just noticed it just lost a bit. I don't know whether that's because there was a rush for deadlines or things like that.
Yeah.
There's some lettering in some of the later issues that's a little bit inconsistent in places. Some of it feels a bit sort of squashed, but like I say, you see that in the later issues. But other than that, it's just got a feel and a style that I really like, and I do hope they do some more in the future.
No, I haven't seen this. I must have a look at this. Where did you get yours from? Did you buy it off them at Cardiff? Or?
They got in touch with us. They sent me. So yeah, it was good to finally see it, because I love the covers of this book. I honestly think if Dave's got these original sort of art painted pieces, there's definitely some that, you know, are begging to be bought as original artwork, I think, because they're so unique. They're not like anything you sort of see before, and yeah, it's quirky. I like to see what the original pages look like. So definitely Dead Star Publishing, Seven Shades, check it out if you want something a bit different, and in the Western genre, which you don't.
I like a Western.
I don't think you see enough of it.
Not in the UK. Do you know, weirdly, you see loads in Europe, don't you?
Yeah.
We're seeing loads of Western books coming through from European publishers. Yeah. But yeah, not that many coming from England or America, which is kind of, we always love Westerns here, don't we?
Yeah. So there you go. That's my one. So that's round 2 done with. But do we have any shout outs? I know you do, Tony.
Yeah, I've got a few. I had lunch with Kev Brett. I was up in Nottingham last week. I had lunch with Kev and quite a giggle we had. And Nottingham is shaping up to be a fucking brilliant do again.
Yeah.
We're obviously releasing issue 3 there. I'm manning both our table with you and Dan, and also the No Brow table. At the No Brow table, we've got the big surprise at the moment is we got Luke Pearson from Hilda coming, and this is his only UK appearance. Luke is, not only is he the creator and comic artist for the comic series at Hilda, but he also has written a couple of the shows as well, a couple of the episodes. So he is the person to meet. That is the place to come and find Luke. He's local, so I think he's always coming down. I'm not sure if I'm picking him up, but I might be. So that would be just absolutely brilliant. Hamish Steele's there. Hamish Steele will be there at the table with us as well. Hamish also is an Eisner winner this year out of No Brow. So he won the Eisner for Dead India, which was brilliant, and rightly so. Along with those two incredible guests is Laura Trinder, one of our favourite people in the world.
Yeah.
Lambo's going to be there. Big shout out to Lambo. I think he had a bit of a personal blow today. So I've just messaged him, see if he's all right. So keep your chin up, Lambo. Chris Wildgoose is obviously there as well, with his good lady wife, Laura. Zach Simmons-Hearn, a good friend of ours. I saw him at NICE the other day. The Etheringtons are there as well. And more and more names are being added to the list as we go.
Yeah.
It's shaping up to be a great. Go and buy your tickets. You can buy, if you're at the Forbidden Planet in Nottingham, you can buy them there, or you can buy them at Nottingham Comic Con. nottinghamcomic.co.uk, or if you go to Nottingham Comic on Twitter, you can get in contact with them there as well.
Indie talent there, like some people that have been on the show, some people that are going to be future guests, no doubt, on this show. And like, I'm looking forward to catching up with some people that, you know, I've been wanting to talk to for a little while, actually. As well,
it's a big family show as well. It's a real family feel to it, you know.
Yeah, but something that is for mature audiences only, but will be launching at Nottingham is issue 3 of Awesome Comics, our little anthology. Yeah. We finalised that this very week.
Yeah, we did. Yeah, well pleased with it. The cover is by Marvel artist and Black Panther storyboarder Ed Jaquino. We're very proud of it.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Ed.
We love Ed. And if you go to, so do it out now.
Yeah.
Awesomecomicpod.bigcartel.com. Come buy an issue. It helps pay for the print costs for 3 and 4.
Yeah.
So please do. It's at £1 for a digital copy.
Yeah.
And you'll get it the same day because I'm checking it hourly at the moment.
Yeah. And we're launching it at Nottingham on October the 20th. And from the moment that the sort of the convention opens, it will be available on our store. So you can put your orders in on the day. So
10 o'clock from that day, I'll basically be sitting on my phone sending it from a Dropbox.
Oh dear. Any other shout outs?
That's it for me. Yeah, that's
brilliant.
It.
Brilliant. I just want to shout out to all you lovely people that have put up with me and Tony. Just rambling on.
It's been sexy.
It's been wonderful. But we've got a couple more books just to burn through quickly.
Yeah.
And then we'll let you get on with the rest of your week. But okay.
Go on, you go first, babes.
Yeah.
Go on.
Yeah, I'll go first because we're going to do one each and then we're going to combine forces.
Join one.
We're going to, like Voltron, we're going to join together. For some...
Like the human centipede.
No, why do you have to make it dirty? Why? Anyway.
You're not going to go on about holding Matt Garvey again, are you, Farfow?
No. Well,
that did help me sleep that day, got to tell you. And not because it made me tired. Well, it did kind of, but after a few minutes.
Yeah, I thought you'd appreciate that. I was going to put some soft music behind it, but I can't be bothered.
What? Editing? What?
Oh, God, I've got to edit this show. God, people only knew. But the book I'm going to talk about is one I got from Werewolf Press. I got it on Amazon when I found out about it. It's got the artwork by literally one of my favourite artists of recent years, who's just... artist who he's done stuff for 2000 AD called Piper, which I realise is Piper, but it is the second volume of Realm of the Damned. This one's called Signum Draconis. Now I on a past show I talked about the first Realm of the Damned, which I picked up at a 2000 AD event. You know, the 2000 AD event, I think I bought some merch and the book sort of came with it, the nice hardcover book, and was that
Lawgiver or was that the 2000 Lawgiver. AD one?
That was a 2000.
It was the 40th.
It was the 40th, yeah.
Okay.
I've been wanting to read that series for a while because I thought it looked cool. And it just blew my mind. It's brutal. It's metal as fuck.
Right.
It's right up
like
my...
Us.
Properly. You know, this is... I mean... It is for mature audiences. I can say that. You know,
there's a lot of blood in it, isn't there?
There's a lot of blood. There is a lot of swearing. There's nudity. It's just brilliant. Yeah, and it's basically a world of like vampires and monsters. And you know, the first volume of Realm of the Damned was set in present day, and it dealt with Belal. I'm gonna get the names wrong, and lots of like classic sort of creatures were in it. But Signum Draconis is sort of a prequel story based around one of the main characters. It's set in the early 15th century. So it's centuries before our world belonged to the damned. Athena Petrova, a vampire knight in Transylvania, fought and fed. And she struggles to defend her ancestral home from the predation... Oh, God, see, this book is full of big words. No, seriously, and I have trouble reading from a script at the best of times. but basically, there's a lot of politics going on between like the churches and vampires and pagans, and there's a whole world. This totally builds up the world, and it's a brutal world. You see, like, you know, there's chainmail, there's gore, there's war. I mean, you see people just being ripped apart. But there's a real heavy political story going on in the background as well. Like people are sort of murdering each other. They're just playing each other. And, like, she sort of... she doesn't agree with the side she's on, so she goes off and does her own thing, which then maybe she started, like, almost an apocalyptic event kind of thing.
Okay, right. How long is this? How many pages is this?
This is... I'm going to look at it now. Does it have a page?
It's like a trade length, is it?
It is trade length. It is a complete trade length. It is sort of split up. I think there are chapter things, so I don't know whether it came out in issues before, because I swear...
I've seen it about, and I can't think where I've seen it, in what format. Do you know what I mean?
I think The Realm of the Damned originally came out. I don't know whether it was in the magazine or something like that. I think it was something to do with... it came out in chapters like that. I've only ever seen them as, like, sort of graphic novels, and, like, if you go to werewolfpress.co.uk or realmofthedam.co.uk, you can find out more about it. I know when the first one came out, they really did a push, because there was, like, proper sort of black metal bands, you know, there was actual bands
they're drawn into
the book and stuff, so it was on, like, heavy metal magazines and stuff like that, so it got that, which I think is great, you know, for comic books to take advantage if you've got that sort of angle that you can take advantage of, just go for it. And this book is, I would say, it's a lot heavier and more in-depth than the first book, because it really does go into the religious aspects and, you know, the church and, you know, the politics of people fucking each other over. I think we were talking before we started recording about, like, Spartacus.
Yeah.
And in the way that is...
I'm obsessed with it.
Yeah. That is violence and brutality... and sexuality and basically political backstabbing all over the shop, isn't it? Something like that. If you like that kind of storytelling, Realm of the Damned's for you. It's that kind of thing.
Right, okay. Yeah.
I think, Alec Worley does a fantastic work on the script, because this is, especially if you like historical sort of work, this is great as well.
Cool.
But Pye's work is, I mean, I bought a print from him recently, which I think is just arrived in the post today, so I need to pick that up. But just phenomenal pages. I know he sort of chuckled about, like, this book is full of so much chain mail, which probably drove him crazy, because this is an artist that, you know, you see every link of the chain mail on the characters. You see, and there are spreads where just, you know, like, war is going on, you know, that, like, the classic sort of historical fights, but, you know, no one has been shortchanged. If there's a crowd scene, every character is a different sort of character, and some of them are sort of like monstrous sort of twisted versions of, like, human beings or, like, otherworldly creatures. So, you know, fair play. I hope they do more of this, you know. It's just added to the world, this one. God knows how long it took them to do.
It's incredibly detailed, isn't it?
Yeah, incredibly.
From what you sent me screenshots of it. Incredibly detailed.
Yeah, and it was a longer read than I thought it was going to be, because the story was so in depth. Does that make sense? I picked it up thinking I'm gonna absolutely burn through this, and I started reading it and thought, Jesus, this is actually quite heavy. So, yeah, you proper value for money. Realm of the Dam, Signum Draconis. I got mine from Amazon as soon as Pi said that it was available. I thought, finally, I've been looking forward to this, because there's also stuff in the back. There's back matter, like sketches. You know, you see his wonderful pencil work. Literally, you know, you can see the pencil lines of the cover. You see how detailed his pencils are for that. It's just amazing. Yeah, and if you've read the first book, this sort of has a nice bookend to this story, which, you know, you could read this, then go on and read the other book straight away. So, yeah, it's great stuff, loved it. Brutal horror, heavy metal storytelling at its finest, so that's Realm of the Dance.
Cool,
so
yeah, I know you're very excited about this one. I like it when we get excited about comics. Yeah. I like it when we're sort of sending each other backwards and forwards. Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
Cool. Okay, are you ready for this one?
Go for it.
Okay. Kingdom. John McNaught. It came out at the weekend early. It's 128 pages, full colour. It's the fourth book by John at Nobrow, and I'm not just saying this because it's Nobrow, so don't go, oh, you're only promoting this one because it's Nobrow. No, this is genuinely in the running for my book of the year. Totally.
Wow.
Yeah. It's currently showing for pre-order on the website. If you go on the website and you can order it. Basically, we were worried we weren't going to get it back from the printers in time. And then I got home last night and there was a big box of 20 volumes of it. I took it into work and two people bought a copy off me.
Amazing.
Yeah, that's just awesome. By looking at it. Neither of whom, both of whom are sort of professors and both of whom are big art fans. And they just looked at this and they went, how do you manage this level of lino cut? It is just incredible. Yeah, so it was available at the weekend. I wouldn't be surprised if I could easily say that it would be sold out because it is just an absolutely beautiful book. I read you the back of it. A family sets off for a long weekend at a caravan park in the British coast. Now, when I read this, it does sound slightly banal. It does sound like the most boring, you know, book ever. Yeah. But let me get into it and I'll tell you why it's not. We follow them through the familiar landscape of a summer holiday, motorway service stations, windswept cliffs, dilapidated museums and tourist gift shops. In this atmospheric and contemplative work, John McNaught explores the rhythms of nature, the passing of time, the beauty and boredom of a summer holiday. Now, I think my shorthand review of this is a book you look at and you sit back and you stare at and you remember all those holidays you had as a kid. It is just so reminiscent of it. It's set present day, so it is set in present day. So the kids do have mobile phones and they're playing computer games and stuff like that. But it's about a mum and two kids, a boy and a girl. And a lot of it is about the young boy. And he sort of wanders about in this sort of slightly sad looking seaside town. And you get this real sort of solitary feeling you get as a kid. You know, when you're a kid and you're on holiday and your friends are all back at home and you're sort of wandering about or you're on your bike and, you know, you're walking down the beach and mum and dad are, you know, off boozing it up probably. You know, and this sort of thing. It's got that. It's good. It's the England of today. It is genuinely, you know, and it's full of the sort of little facets of England and in modern society. But it's also, it looks back to the England of yesteryear that is disappearing. The kids can't get any phone signal and this sort of pushes them back into the past. And it throws sort of strange looking seagulls and exploring the area and... But I told you I'd beat you on this. There's some pages that have got 35 panels on them. There's some that are just like little snapshots of things that are happening, and, you know, little gift shops, and the kid will be getting up and looking out the window.
Did
or he'll
you say
be
35?
Yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah.
How big is this book?
It's only an A4 hardback. Yeah.
Oh.
Magazine size. But it's like, for example, just one page is the kid walking out and he looks in the around the caravan park and there's birds and swallows and, you know, sparrows and seagulls. And he takes a stick and whacks it against the building and walks off down towards the beach. And that is just, there's very little dialogue. There's not a huge amount of dialogue in it. And a lot of the dialogue that's in it is overheard dialogue where the kids or the family are wandering about and they're hearing other people talk. Or it's just the mum saying, put your phones down, or we're almost home, or, you know, this sort of really echoey, sort of reminiscent of your childhood stuff. It is absolutely breathtakingly beautiful.
Did you say it was lino cut?
Yeah, it looks like it is. It looks like it is. I don't think it can be. I don't think there's any way you could do that.
Yeah.
But there's,
looking at the page, I thought, if that's lino cut, this person is supernatural.
Yeah, no, exactly. Then there's almost like faux lino cut pages. If you look at the last couple of pages, he does a jagged edge to the side of the panels as if it was that sort of lino cut thing. You know, when you print, you get that double image sometimes, don't you? You know,
yeah.
And a lot of the lights in the distance look like the holes you would make with the lino cut tool. You know, with the light shining out from them.
Yeah.
But to be honest, I couldn't fucking tell you how he does it. It's just incredible. You know, the geezer's clearly a Rain Man in his basement. Sorry, John, you're clearly not. But, you know, it's like he's some kind of sort of genius. There's one page that just I stuck on Twitter today and he got like 400 likes or something, which is a girl walking through this sort of huge puddle.
Yeah.
And the
stunning.
Have you seen that on Twitter?
Yeah.
Mate? Yeah. Just unbelievable. You know, and what he does cleverly is he reverses the image in some of the panels and you don't know what you're looking at. Are you looking at a reverse of the image? Are you looking back up at it? Are you looking at the reflection in the puddle and this girl? And there's no words in it. And it's just her sort of in her shoes, kicking the water about in a puddle and walking slowly through it. And it's just incredible. I mean, there's just one page, it's just snails wandering about a car park, you know. Just the son plays video games, and you know, he's clearly an unhappy kid, and it reminds you of the sort of the loneliness of that age, really. It is clinically cut. There are moments in it you think, what's going on here? Why is this? Why are we closing up in this? There's some bits on the motorway, which is just at nighttime, which just really stuck out for me as the sort of the way he uses the light on the page. He uses a limited light palette. A lot of the pages are grey, blue, black. But then again, what he'll use is the yellows and the oranges to show the lights and stuff like that. Just incredible. Just like a close-up of a scavenging seagull, or the drip of water from a seaside cafe, or the joke on the side of the mug that the grandma's drinking from, or the sparks from a fire that from the night before. And
yeah, I need to.
It's incredible, mate. It's just absolutely beautiful. I would say come and get it at the table at Thingy Do, but that was last weekend, wasn't it? But it's really, really atmospheric. It's just the freeness of a small, the sort of the vibe and the freeness of a small little seaside town, and just that moment in time that is just forever captured and you doesn't move on, and you're just stuck in sitting on this park bench looking out to sea, and it's just beautiful. Nobrownet.net to get yourself a copy if you're not, you hadn't got one at Thought Bubble, which you should have done. You go to @John @JON_MCN, and that's his Twitter, or go to johnmcnaught.co.uk. You can find some more examples of his work, and he's produced quite a few things for Nobrown. They're all this clever, this beautiful, and it's got one of the best covers, I think. Just the stillness of the moment of a seagull on a cliff, it just didn't get better than that, you know. This is what Nobrown does so well. They do capture this sort of like illustrative moment, which is just really, really well done here. Top stuff. Makes me really proud to be even the small involvement I've got with this company. And Sam Arthur's messaged me saying that this is something special. When I said, it's arrived, and he said, look, this is something special, you got to look at it. And he's right. Totally. There you go.
Amazing. Okay, we got one more for you lovely people.
One more left.
And let's just say this one is the first comic to come out of the Free Doom realm. It's a one-shot comic following Errol the Bonehead and his quest to become a member of the infamous Peace Brigade. What the hell are we talking about? Why, it's the 48-page A4 printed perfect bound comic that is Errol versus Evil by Daryl Thorpe.
Yes. Number do you get? Come on, what number do you get?
Are you going to say that and I haven't got the bloody I brought the book up, but I haven't got the bloody card with me.
I've got number 2. Bring it 4P. Number 2,
mate. I haven't got number 2. I've got later. So he obviously
he's done you.
He obviously loves you.
He loves me better.
Unbelievable.
Just tell him.
So that's all I'm going to say about this book.
I've got to say, whatever cheese Daryl eats before going to bed, I want some of that cheese.
I don't think he sleeps, because this is the work of a man who's not seen slumber in quite some time. This is a wonderful video game hallucination of an action story that just throw some more words at me, Tony. Just because this is this is just awesome. I know if
somebody was watching The Legend of Grayskull or whatever that fucking cartoon's called. And He-Man, and
He-Man and the Master of the Universe, Tony.
He-Man, yeah, and they ingested a load of LSD. That's kind of where it's going. But it's got a coherent story to it.
There's a kind of video gamey sort of vibe with like these crazy bosses. As Errol, who's a lovely chap, wonderful hair. I used to have hair like that. Is basically just he literally travels along, he's on this big quest and he's fighting big monsters, lots of different types of characters. I think it's unparalleled sort of character and creature design going on in this book. I mean, Thorpe's work, I know we're friends with him, but I will say this, his work, even if we didn't know him, his work is distinct.
There's nothing like it out there.
He's created his own sort of visual language which filters into every story he tells. And as soon as you see a piece of his work, you know it's his, which I think is one of the most important things you can have, certainly in comics and in independent
publishing. Also, while I'm reading it, I'm hearing him telling me the story.
Yeah,
that's literally how I am with him, because he's so enthusiastic about his comics. That translates. So taking the character away from the comics, the creator ends of the comics, you can't with him, because he's like embedded in every page almost.
Just think of like your favorite graffiti artist, and they've been
and
they've been watching Monty Python for weeks on end.
It's that sort of and also there's a little bit of the Nexus in there, because there's a load of heads that talk to each other.
There's all kinds of things. There's trees that talk. There's the trees that almost look like mushrooms, and there's giant snakes. There's like a pile of heads. There's witches. There's, you know, and Errol is just. I mean, there are certain panels that also reminded me of Scotty Young. I can see a Scotty Young influence. There's a little girl. One of my favorite panels is when she's screaming, "You are dead." There's these great moments, but and she's saying,
"I've got that page in front of me." Yeah,
boys, fetch me my lunchbox. It's time to kick ass. And I mean, the dialogue is so. How do you describe what the dialogue? You know, there's
the dialogue is part of the art in certain times, isn't it? And even the dialogue gets whacked.
Yeah,
payment, and someone's whacking the actual dialogue. With
and
their
this,
hand.
You know, the, and yeah. also the dialogue. Sort of reminds me of the way that, you know, Clockwork Orange had its own way of had its own language, didn't it? The way people spoke. This world, you know, everyone, there's, you know, they have their way of talking, and
we're your guardian home slices sent from he who is known as Thorpe. I'm handy. You know, really, well, I don't know what that means, but it works.
He does this does a huge dive off a cliff, and as he's trying to do an Olympic style dive, the word Olympic is just really huge on the page behind him. But the bit that made me laugh about that page, there's two trees looking at him, and one of them says, "Wow, this kid's brave and got style," to which the other tree says, "Here, eyes on me, Ethel, you tart."
I was just reading one where he's falling and it says, "Golden nuggets of freedom." This is a bit dramatic.
Yep. We love Thorpe's work.
I love the format as well. I love the sort of landscape format to it. It's just so different, isn't it?
Yeah.
The only thing I would have done if I was him, I would have put the title on the spine. I think from a sort of OCD comic collector, I do love a title on a spine. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I can see where you're coming from. But the cover itself would make a wonderful lithograph.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. I want that T-shirt as well. I want that on a T-shirt.
Yeah, I mean,
Errol vs. Evil. Yeah.
I mean, he's got like badges and stuff of the apples.
Yeah, I've got them. Yeah, I've got those badges. And he sent me. There's like an enamel badge as well. I've got through as well.
So much good stuff. This is I want, and I think the best compliment you can say is we want to see more of this world once we finish this book. Right, where's the next one? Knowing Thorpe, he'll bring the next one out next week, because he's just an absolute beast when it comes to putting out
comics. He killed it on the Kickstarter as well, didn't he?
Yeah,
which is good.
And he's been churning it. I mean, lots of people have been getting this book for a long time. I've been meaning to talk about it for a while. And if you see him at conventions, this will be amongst an awful lot of work that he has, and amazing prints and stuff. We've been lucky enough to get some original artwork for him, which we treasure. And also, he's just got because he's got that sort of design background as well, he really pays attention to the quality of things in terms of the printout and the actual sort of final book you're getting. You don't get anything that's subpar from him. So
it's like a few Kickstarters. The last Kickstarter I got from Clifty as well was the same.
Yeah.
They're almost like sealed in plastic. You know, they've got these sort of really nice. It's not a comic bag. It's like almost like a sealed bag that it comes in, and it's a bit like. Do you remember Marvel did that with the Ultimate Spider-Man? They did it with a few titles, didn't they?
Yeah.
I almost don't want to open it. I want to get another one so I don't have to open it. He's playing to my sort of comic reader addiction. I think Thorpe. Yeah. So he's clearly seen that hole in the market. Very wise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, you know him, you love him, we love him too, and this is the beginning of an epic journey for Errol that we're looking forward to seeing more of. So
good.
I mean, I don't think we only described 1% of the craziness that goes on.
Yeah,
in this book,
it's a good read.
Yeah,
it's a real sort of dive in read, isn't it?
Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah, really good. So there you go. And you people have got a few things to put on your wish list now. So
there you go.
Sorry about spending your money, but you know, you've just got back from Thought Bubble. If you didn't make it a Thought Bubble, I didn't either. So I feel your pain. But yeah, so you've got even more comics to get now. So
yeah.
So there you go, and that was another.
I quite enjoyed that review show. I quite like that.
Yeah, quite nice. I think we'll do a couple more of these in the future because, like I say, we do get sent a lot of stuff. I've picked a few out now. I've got another 5 books that I'm just.
I'm so behind. Yeah. I'm always behind. Yeah. I've always got like 20. I think I sent you a screenshot about 2 years ago of the 37 books I had on my list.
Yeah,
I'm always behind. So I apologize to people. I haven't got your comic, but
yeah,
you know what I mean? I've got a day job as well and a dog.
Yeah. Oh, God bless him. Anyway, we hope you enjoyed this episode. And if you want to find out more, or if we've got any name pronunciations wrong, or perhaps I forgot to give someone a shout out like I normally bloody do every week, then you can email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Find out more. You can follow us on Twitter @theawesomepod, where we'll be announcing our next lineup of guests. Very soon, which is going to be exciting. There's going to be some funny shows coming up, I think, as well as some very in-depth and interesting topics.
So, I'm pressing the flesh a bit over Thought Bubble, aren't I? Looking for new guests.
You are indeed. Don't do it
not
too
like
much,
that.
Don't you? Yep.
No.
You can like us on facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast. And if you like going to groups and just having a conversation about comics, actual proper comic conversation, not just hard selling everywhere, then go to Awesome Comics Talk on Facebook, because that's great every week. So thank you for listening to us, whether it was on the website awesomecomics.podbean.com. If you listen to us on iTunes, leave us a review, subscribe, it helps get the word out. We appreciate every review, every retweet, anyone who's ever said something nice about us, thank you. And there's just more to come.
And Dan will kiss you.
Yeah, we can promise. Oh, actually, Dan, you've just walked in through the door.
Dan, all right, mate.
Yeah. Are you all right?
Yes.
Splendid. So is that literally what you're going to wear, though?
What that's supposed to mean,
Oh, can you believe he's wearing
you're
that,
right.
Tony?
Is he all right? Dan?
Yes.
Yeah. Is there any messages you want to pass on to the listeners?
Yep, all those things are true.
Well, what can you say about that?
Fair enough.
Blimey. Yeah. But you know,
would you like to be known as Dandy Lion from now on?
That certainly sounds like a lot of fun.
Okay, fair enough.
Oh,
good.
Blimey.
Yeah.
Hey, and that's what you need to call him when you see him at Nottingham. Isn't that right, Dan?
Fuck off.
And that's what you call acting, folks. That's what you call it.
Don't.
Oh, no.
Not
you can cut that out.
Let them know how the cheese is made. Well, we're out of sausage. Anyway, thank you for listening to us on Spotify, Stitcher, Podnose, Podknife. What other networks are we on, Tony?
There's one called Pod Relatively Indifferent to Trailers. That's quite a good one.
You're just a grumpy old man, aren't you?
That gave me a little bit of a quiver.
Really?
Yeah, nice.
What about you, Dan? Did that turn you on?
Honestly, it was the biggest one I've ever had. Made my eyes water. Yeah, it really did.
Oh, splendid. So,
that's not going to work out at all. You know that, don't you?
No.
Not going to work out at all. We tried our best for that.
We'll never know. Okay. You know, if I don't get any audio from him, who knows what audio clips I'll use? you know, I've got a few days to kill before this.
No!
No! Anyway, thank you for listening to us. Where can people find us online, etc.? Tony?
You can find me at Vanguard. No, Ezohyz on Twitter. Or you can go to neverironanything.blogspot.co.uk, where it won't matter because Thought Bubble's gone, but I put what to find at Thought Bubble up. There you go.
Yeah, there'll probably be a new article by the time you listen to this anyway.
Yeah, it will be. We've got a couple lined up.
You can find Dan Butcher at Vanguard Comic, and you can read Vanguard Comic at vanguardcomic.com. I got that right, didn't I, Dan?
Lord, no. Nope. Jesus. You can find me on Twitter at Vanguard Comic, and you can read Vanguard at vanguardcomic.com.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, yeah, okay. What put your balls away.
Yeah.
No.
You mean seriously?
Fuck off.
I can see your left ball. Put it away.
No.
Oh, dear. This is why we don't have the webcams on, Dan. I hope you're happy about this.
Dan's anyone who ever turns them on. Although Ian had his on last week, didn't he?
Well,
for a minute, I think he totally misunderstood.
I mean, the one thing we can always say is Dan definitely turns them on. Don't you, Dan?
What that's supposed to mean, huh?
God, I've given myself a real challenge this week, haven't I?
Fuck, you keep doing it as well.
I know. I just got addicted to it.
Honestly, it was the biggest one I've ever had.
All right, calm down, Dan. Calm down. So you can follow me on Twitter at Jester Diablo. You can find out more about my comic at theredmousefrommars.com. Thank you very much for listening.
Yeah, that worked fine.
Yeah, that worked
fine. Go with it. Just move on.
Yeah,
it's fine.
And yeah, from Tony, my wonderful partner in life.
Thank you.
Dan.
Fuck off.
And myself. Yeah. Have a brilliant week. And as always, what do they do, Tony?
Stay relatively indifferent.
Yes. See ya.
Yeah, see ya. That sounds good. Yeah.
No.